Hello, everyone out there. It's easy for me to say, and welcome back to the Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast, a creatively titled podcast that goes back into time to review and give a little context to episodes of Jim Crockett Promotions Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling Program as it appears on the WWE Network. I am Mike Sempervivi, joined as always by my co-host Roman Gomez, and this is episode number 5, proper, where we're going to be taking a look at the television, which was taped on Wednesday, January 27th at the WPCQ Studios, Channel 36, in Charlotte, North Carolina. And before we begin, I just want to say thank you to all of you honoring us with your patronage. If you want a little bit more or just want to reach out to us, you can do so on Twitter and Facebook. Just type in Mid-Atlantic Pod and look for the logo. You can pretty much do that on any form of social media, whether it be Vimeo, Instagram, all that sort of stuff. But we are most active on Twitter and on Facebook. And I hate to give a timestamp on anything, but as we record this show, it is New Year's Eve, 2019. The new art cards for all the Arcadian Vanguard shows have come out, and I want to thank Travis Heckel very much, who created the logo for this show and does amazing artwork. But if I'm a little bit out of sorts today, Roman, I'm going to go ahead and blame New Year's Eve for that. How are you, my friend, on this shadow into 2020?
I am exhausted. It has been a long, crazy week at work, but something I've been looking forward to is doing this podcast. This helps break the monotony of working long hours, and talking Mid-Atlantic wrestling is always a lot of fun. And like you mentioned, Mike, it is New Year's Eve, so I'd like to wish a Happy New Year's to all our listeners out there, and we promise to be even better in 2020 than we were in 2019.
Yes, and Roman and I are going to have a contest, actually, beginning next show. You're going to have to vote on which one of us contributed the most to 2019 on this podcast. And you know what, folks? That's a perfect segue for me to get into what took place on this episode of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. January 30th, 1982 is when it began to air in its local market. I know, Roman, that when it comes to WWE Classics and 24/7, sometimes they would actually use the date that the show was taped on as the list date for the show. But up on the WWE Network, they actually give you the date that it was originally broadcast, quote unquote. So here we are on January 30th, 1982, the fifth episode of the year. And the show opens up with David Crockett microphone in hand, not Bob Cottle, who was at his side, as David introduces Sandy Scott. And we have thankfully blasted through the WWE overdub to Don Ray's Got to Have Lovin' and skipped right over that and got right to David Crockett introducing Sandy Scott in the NWA World Tag Team Title Tournament.
Sandy Scott, come on in.
Right, Sandy Scott, our special NWA representative. Sandy, the wrestling world is still buzzing about our World Tag Team Championship Tournament.
Calls every day from all over the world, Japan, Mexico, Europe, United States, and this is what it's all about here, the World Tag Team Championship belts in the tournament.
All right, and you know, hey, David, it all started back in 1975.
That's
back
right.
In San Francisco, when the Andersons won the tournament
that's,
out there.
That's correct, but I have to say one thing, too, that we're going to have a special announcement from the chairman of the tournament committee, Eddie Graham, about what is going on about this tournament, about the Andersons. And you were talking about the Andersons. That's right. The Andersons started all in 1975 in San Francisco when they won the World Tag Team Championship, and they were something else.
All right,
too.
And we've got a tape of them, too,
yes,
David.
We did.
A tape of the Andersons in action. So let's watch that right now, fans. Here it is, the Andersons.
Right out of that one over for the tag to Galata. Now here is Ole with a leg takedown. Right into the headlock, and he is moving very well. It's been some time now since we've seen Ole Anderson in that ring and in there with his brother as a partner, but I tell you, they've worked together for so long, they still almost are like one person.
That's
in the
right.
ring.
They go together like ham and eggs.
Absolutely.
It is my hope that there was somebody out there that told Ole and Gene Anderson that David Crockett referred to them as ham and eggers, just to see what their response would be. I doubt that happened very much, but I did stop it right there just to point out, you hear David and Bob talk about the Andersons winning the NWA World Tag Team Championship in San Francisco about 10 years prior. It was actually, and they went back to the match they were showing was a match against Gary Young and Hubert Gallant. And I'm not sure exactly what the timestamp was on that match, but what they were referring to was back in 1975. In fact, it was the January 29th edition of the show when it was taped that aired on February 1st that was taped at WRAL Studios Channel 5 in Raleigh. That is when the Andersons were given, or when they hit the scene as the NWA World Tag Team Champions. They were billed that on arrival on TV that day, saying that they had won a tournament in San Francisco. They had wrestled locally a couple days before that, so it wasn't out of the realm of possibility that they jumped an airplane and took that over to San Francisco, but it's not like anybody was checking that deeply at that time either. So when they came back at that point, that's what they were billed. And they had defeated in Greensboro on February 20th, Paul Jones and Tiger Conway Jr., which caused them to also pick up the Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Championship. And it was about at this time that the NWA Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Championship just basically would become a prop and become background noise. There would be times that it would have a little bit of fire to it when John Studd and Ken Patera would have it a couple years later, but mostly as it was used in the case of Paul Jones and Ricky Steamboat, a lot of times it would just basically be used as something, some sort of fodder to continue on a storyline or to get something going. But enough of that. We will get back to the announcements of what we've got coming up for today's show, as well as the announcements and the introductions for our first match.
All right, fans, we're going to be hearing more about that during the program. David, as we say, we've really got action.
That's right. And speaking of some of the other teams, they're here. The former World Tag Team Champions, Jay Youngblood and Ricky Steamboat, they're here. Also, the father and son tag team combination, Blackjack Mulligan Jr. and Sr. Also, Austin Idol and Ivan Koloff, they're here. Plus, we're going to see Adrian Adonis and Venturi. We're going to have a tape of them. And it's a fantastic program.
All
it
right,
really
fans,
is.
It's going to be a great hour, so stay with us. We're about ready now for action. So let's go to the ring now as we have the introduction now for our opening match. And in the ring, as we say, tag team action right here. This match will be for one fall with a 10-minute time limit. Our opponents, first from Jackson, Tennessee, at 250 pounds. Here is big Mike Miller. Mike Miller, his partner from Cincinnati, 235 pounds. Jeff Sword. Across the ring, their opponents from Eagle Pass, Texas, at 290 pounds, Blackjack Mulligan Sr., his partner at 230 pounds, Blackjack Mulligan Jr. We'll be back.
All right, Roman, we saw him on tape a couple of weeks ago. Now we get to see him in the ring, in the studio. Blackjack Mulligan Sr. and Jr. taking on Mike Miller and Jeff Sword on what will be a tag team heavy edition of the program, as well it should be, since the NWA World Tag Team Title Tournament is the dominant topic of conversation in the area. Sonny Fargo is the referee for all of the matches on the show today. And we had Roddy Piper join Bob Cottle on commentary. Will not shock anybody out there to know that the Mulligans won in about 5.5 minutes when Mulligan Jr. pinned Jeff Sword after Blackjack Sr. threw him off the ropes and Jr. followed behind with a flying forearm that was not as pretty as those flying through the air rolling barrel roll lariats would be a lot later on in Barry's career. But hey, you got to start somewhere. What'd you think about the match? There were some high points, some flying blackjacks at one point in the match, and some prime Roddy Piper there on commentary stirring things up.
Yeah, I thought it was cool that Piper had mentioned he was no stranger to father and son tag teams because he alluded to the Armstrongs, which he knew from Georgia. And he mentioned something during the contest about it could be a disadvantage for a father and son to be a tag team because what father wants to see his son get beat up? And he had mentioned that a father would probably run in and cause a disqualification. And obviously, you don't want to be disqualified in a match if you're going for the NWA tag titles in the tournament. And you had mentioned Blackjack with the flying head scissors, but there was a really awkward moment. Blackjack Mulligan dropped Jeff Sword. He had him up for a vertical suplex and just dropped him really awkwardly. And I, along with the television audience in unison, just went, ooh, you just could tell how painful it was, and Sword immediately tagged out and rolled outside the ring. And that's something to look for those of you that are following along with us and watching it on the network. That vertical suplex that went wrong, oh, it was brutal.
Yeah, in another stratosphere, you would think that, okay, Blackjack was going up, and Sword, if this was a different generation, he was turning his body, and he was going to be put down in a Mikinoshu driver. And that's, of course, obviously not Blackjack Mulligan Sr.'s forte, especially not in 1982. So, I mean, Sword just kind of turned up in the air, and Mulligan just kind of let him go, and he just fell like a heaping sack of potatoes. And yeah, even at some point, Bob Cottle was, ooh, and I think you actually hear it in the next clip I have coming up, where this one I had to take because it points out, you talk about how Roddy talks about, without actually saying Georgia or WTBS, that he's got a familiarity with father-son combinations, because anybody that, if you go to YouTube and you look at some of the stuff that Chris Zellner has saved and uploaded from over the years and that other people have put up and have tapes of Georgia, you would know that concurrently, Roddy Piper was into a feud with Bob and Brad Armstrong. But he doesn't actually outright say that, and he never actually outright mentions the job either. We'll have to see if he does that coming up too, but he has mentioned that he's got a job, but doesn't actually say where it is or anything like that. And Ole Anderson, any interaction he has with Roddy Piper, he doesn't bring it up either. We'll have to see if they actually do make some mention of that, even in the slightest bit, even in a joking form or a ribbing form or something like that down the line. But with Piper, he talked about the father-son tag teams and what kind of father wants to sit there and watch his son get beat up. But what is very interesting here is he seems to almost be driving a wedge, and whether he did that on purpose, whether that was something that they wanted him to tease, whether that's something he came up with on his own, you can hear him start to kind of say that he wants to talk to, quote, Barry. Hint of Junior maybe being in his father's shadow, but I'll let everybody see what they think about it.
Still, Sword is hurt too.
Still, it's the son that is the crux of this team, and that's what these tag teams, when they're going for $25,000, take a little advice from me. Go after the father, because the son is the one upholding the team. If you could give me a chance next week and talk to Barry, maybe I'll tell you what, folks, if it's okay with Barry, I would interview him next week and ask him some of the enlightening questions that I could not be as good as talking by a fantastic young fella. He reminds me so much of myself. Oh. Look at the aggressiveness. Who is doing the work for the team right now?
Well, he's in the ring, and of course Junior is.
Very good.
But
he's in the ring.
Senior outside. He's got to be.
Very
That's
good.
That's right.
Yes, Senior is outside. And how long has Senior been outside?
Oh, just only a few seconds.
Just a few seconds. Uh-huh. Carolina time.
All right, Roman. Wait a second. What's he doing right there? He's doing something. He's mixing up something. He's got something planned there. He's got something. He's calling him Barry. He's driving a wedge. He's doing something right there, the devious Roddy Piper. Am I going crazy?
No, you were definitely onto something. And I just that smirky comment about Mid-Atlantic time or North Carolina time.
Carolina
time. Piper at his best. You know, definitely stirring up the pot right there.
As I mentioned, you know, no surprise the Mulligans get the victory right there. We move on after that match to back to Sandy Scott standing there with Bob and with David Crockett. And obviously, again, the belts are sitting right there on the table in front of them. The NWA World Tag Team Championship. Most of this tournament is coming into focus as we move along. This week, we get a couple of new wrinkles. One of those wrinkles is Eddie Graham being announced as the chairman of the tournament, former NWA president, a position that Jim Crockett Jr. actually holds right now between, 80 and 82. As Jim Crockett Promotions is thriving, he is the president of the NWA. And Sandy, Dave, and Bob then throw it to Gordon Soley, who's in the studios down there on the Championship Wrestling from Florida set. And he's got Eddie Graham talking about the worldwide scope of the tournament, as well as what the situation was with Ole Anderson, which didn't exactly play the same way that Eddie described it on Mid-Atlantic TV. But here you go with Eddie Graham, the new chairman of the tag team tournament.
Past president of the NWA, Eddie Graham, has just been named tournament chairman. The World Tag Team Championship tournament that's upcoming, he has just returned from Europe, where you've had a very, very busy schedule indeed.
Well, Gordon, you know, of course, my long suit was always in the ring wrestling and not administrative. But however, this is probably one of the most exciting assignments that I've had the privilege to participate in. A worldwide tournament to truly select and establish a World Tag Team Championship. Because as you know, the Notorious Andersons held the title for quite a long time, and then one of them was injured, and they missed by one day the time limit. Ole took a partner, but he was actually one day late, and so that created a situation where it necessitated a tournament, and a worldwide tournament is being formulated and underway, and to select, for the first time to my knowledge ever, a truly world-recognized tag team champions. Tournaments are going to be conducted all over the world, with eliminations and eliminations, ultimately down to probably 16 or 18 teams. And then the finals, a site will be selected somewhere along the line for the finals. And Gordon, it's really exciting, I'll tell you. It's like the first time I ever wrestled in Madison Square Garden. I'm really ready to get with it.
Well, in other words, then, the finals of this tournament could be held anywhere within this viewing area.
That's right, anywhere. There'll be a Western Division and an Eastern Division here in the United States. And like I said, I just came back from Europe, and I'm going to be going to the Orient real soon and get this thing organized. And I have some very fine committee members, and we're working diligently. And it should be really a great tournament.
Well, certainly it's a real pleasure to have with us, of course. As I said, the past president of the NWA is a tremendous wrestler, over 10 years, rated in the top 10. And now, of course, a tournament chairman for the World Tag Team Championship Tournament.
There you heard Eddie Graham alongside Gordon Solie add some new wrinkles into the tournament, really driving home the global scope of the thing. And Roman, that's something you brought up last week about how they kept hammering that home and really wanting to play into that, as well as the $1,000 entry fee, which Sandy Scott actually talks a little bit about. He and Bob talk a little bit about that after this interview with Eddie Graham. They bring that aspect up again. One of the interesting things that they added in was, or at least that Eddie may have freestyled in there, was the deal about Ole Anderson being one day late. We do know that Sandy Scott was putting the screws to him over that period of time, Ole Anderson, over getting a new partner. And he actually had one on TV at the end of December, Ray Stevens, which further exasperated the situation and ended up leading to the situation that we had. But we knew he was running out of time. We just didn't know what the deal was, and it had never been mentioned that he had found a partner, and it just happened to be a day late, which in some ways really doesn't make any sense, but let's skip over that for right now. You know, Roman, any thoughts on Eddie Graham and now the inclusion of Florida into a situation where Knoxville and Toronto were already involved because of the spheres of influence that Jim Crockett Jr. already had there, as well as in Georgia where Ole Anderson had a presence as well. You knew they were going to be tied in, but now we've got Florida into the mix. I guess not really a surprise with the working relationship between all of those promoters, but just something else to add in for local viewers that really made it feel like a big deal.
Yeah, I thought it was something with Eddie Graham being named as the tournament chairman, just to add a little more credibility or prestige, if you will, to the tournament. You know, Eddie Graham, of course, a legendary wrestling figure, and you know, just to touch back on something you had mentioned, Mike, I guess Ole was telling the truth during those interviews. He did need just a little more time. You know, he didn't have enough time for a partner, and he was one day late.
Yeah, that was one day, one sad day, and all of the work that Ole has put in. What a miserable bastard he is, where even the NWA, they had to stick to their rules there. They may bend them for others, but from there, we actually, after Sandy Scott talked a little bit about the $1,000 that each team would be putting in for every tournament that they entered. They actually went back to Gordon Solie in Florida with the comments from Jack and Jerry Briscoe. Once again, the Briscoes talk about how big the tournament is going to be, how they can enter as many as they want and work their way up the chain until it ends up with the Eastern winner and the Western winner, which was another thing that they had added in. The fact that they were talking about being, you know, worldwide, but the fact that it was going to break down into an Eastern Division champion and a Western Division champion was something that was relatively new as well, too. So they drove that point home, and it was about a two-minute promo or so, and then they threw it back to the studio where Ray Stevens was there, and he will be back on commentary at points during the show. But Ray had joined Bob Cottle to talk a little bit about the Briscoes, puts them over, talks a little bit about their background before they throw it to a match taped from Florida about a week or two prior. It wasn't really all that long ago that they had gotten this tape from Championship Wrestling from Florida. It's a match between the Briscoes and the Davidsons, John Davidson and Rick Davidson. And in fact, this episode of Championship Wrestling from Florida is up on YouTube on the North Albany 106 channel. At the very least, there amongst it may also be, I believe, the Florida Wrestling Archives, and I'm not sure exactly how that exactly works. You might have to ask Bowdern or Barry over the specifics on that. But the bottom line is the Briscoes were the North American Tag Team Champions, and they mentioned that, and that belt, they won those belts from Funks on January 16th. So that shows you how recent the tape actually was. Bottom line is the Briscoes defeat the Davidsons in about 3 minutes, and it's all just meant to put the Briscoes over. Any thoughts on this match, Roman?
I thought it was a very impressive finish with Jack Briscoe having one Davidson in the figure four and putting the other Davidson into an inside cradle. He beat both men at the same time. I just thought that was pretty cool to see. I kind of popped when I saw that.
That was awesome. And just, the referee was pushing Gerald out of the ring, which gave one of the Davidson boys a chance to jump back in there. And he goes in, and as the other brothers in the figure four just, whoops, gets rolled into by the old master, and a win for the Briscoes. Recent passing of Izzy Slapowitz, and Izzy was a manager in ICW and in the Knoxville portion of Jim Crockett Promotions at this time. Working for Blackjack Mulligan and Ric Flair and Les Thatcher over on that side. He had just passed away on Saturday morning as we record this from complications of a surgery that he was having. Very sad. We send all of our best out to any friends and family that may happen to be listening in. But Izzy's big tag team that he managed while he was with Poffo's ICW and with the venture that took place in Knoxville was the Devil's Duo of Jeff Sword and Doug Vines. And Sword and Vines, as I have mentioned on this show, were a pretty good tag team, local tag team, that just never got an opportunity to team in Mid-Atlantic. For whatever reason, they just did not put them together. And whether they had plans possibly of it later on or what exactly it was, they didn't really get a chance to team with each other. It was always with another partner, as we saw earlier on with Sword and Mike Miller. And Vines and Sword, even though they didn't get a chance to team up, actually got a chance to cut a promo. And in place of where a lot of people were seeing the events that were going to show up in their area, some other people may have gotten this interview. And we definitely get this interview up on the WWE Network. It's an interview with the Devil's Duo of Doug Vines and Jeff Sword, and it may have been the only time that anybody got to hear them kind of talk about themselves as a team. It's a pretty darn good interview, and just kind of shows you the potential that they possibly could have had that Ole Anderson obviously didn't see in any of the three.
All right, fans, with us right now at ringside, we have with us Doug Vine and Jerry Sword. And I tell you,
Jeff Sword.
Okay. Jeff, Jerry, I was very close, but I apologize for that. And I've been a little excited with all this action going on, all these great tag teams. Say, you fellas have got to be back, and you got to be looking at these tag teams. You got to be thinking dollars, as that cash register's got to be running around in that head.
That's right. We're glad to be in this area. And I tell you, we're going to be in these tournaments. Me and Doug together here, we're like brothers. We travel down the road together. We had shared apartments together. We had a few women, So we're going to be looking out. And
you didn't share the women, did you?
Well, I'd rather not say about that, but I just want these tag teams around here to beware. Junior and Senior, I wrestled here a while ago, and they're a tough tag team. One of the best ones around. I guarantee you that right here is one too, brother.
I tell you, talking about tag teams, now you're talking about tough tag teams. Doug, you got to think, look, you got former champions, you got champions, you got everybody. You got people from all over the world. Now, this is not just a United States tournament. We're talking about tag teams, and we're talking about great ones from the world over. Are you and your partner ready for that?
Well, that's what makes this tournament so great, because you got people from all over the world, like you say. That makes me and Jeff that much happier to be in this tournament, because if we can make our way to the top, that'll make a big name for ourselves. Like Jeff said, we're like brothers. People around here can't tell us apart, and that makes advantage for us, because they'll never know which one's in the ring. You know what I mean?
I tell you, yeah. Sometimes that's confusing. You're right about that. Now, let's go back again and talk about you two and you two as a tag team. I don't know as many of the fans have seen you two work together as a tag team before. Is there anything unusual about you as a tag team?
Tell you, we've been together for 2 years. We got teamed up, and we've been on top everywhere. Now we're coming to, like, the wrestling capital of the world. I can guarantee you, we've been in the magazines. You know, we're rated number 10 in the country right now.
That's tremendous.
So I can guarantee you, we ought to get a seat in this term, you know, but we'll settle with working our way up.
But again, we're talking about from all over the world. You're talking about big guys. I mean, look at the big guys. You're talking about guys like Pat Patterson, Ole Anderson and his partner. You're talking about big, tremendous, strong.
Well, a lot of these guys, you know, are former champions, so they're on the way down. Me and Doug, you know, we're young, we're coming up, and we just might pass each other somewhere right around. We're at the top of that ladder, getting all the money and all the women, all the belts, and just take it all.
All right, I see. Fans, there you have it, right here ringside, and we'll be back.
All the money, all of the women, so we can share the women. Let me tell you something. The Rock and Ric Flair, those gentlemen may not have been, but we have an interview later on with Don Gilbert and Keith Larson that make the Devil's Duo sound like Blanchard and Anderson. And I thought that was a pretty good promo. I was entertained by Bob Cottle. You see the work that Bob Cottle puts in on some of these interviews. And I tell you, there are times that, you know, 2.5 minutes, it's his job to try to coach these guys along. And it's not like, you know, Bob Cottle was a weather guy on TV, but here he is, you know, after all those years of experience doing these studio shows, trying to help these young guys along. And the Devil's Duo, did you ever get a chance to see much of ICW Poffo stuff? Did that stuff ever interest you? Did you ever collect any of those tapes?
Yes, I have several of those DVDs with Savage and Poffo and Ronnie Garvin and all them. And it was entertaining, but something I'm kind of surprised, Mike. I wonder if you thought the same thing. Like, they finally give a little love to Vines and Sword, and Cottle doesn't even know his name. He calls him Jerry.
That's well.
And I don't know. I just thought that was kind of unusual. They had a couple days to edit that out or fix that. Why they left that in? I don't know. That was just something that struck me about the interview.
You know, it may just be because it's going to be seen by no one, I guess, if they always had somewhere running. Or it would be seen by so few of people, I guess, in the far reaches of a Michigan or a Baltimore or somewhere that wasn't getting regular shows. Maybe they had that slip in there or something like that. They didn't quite worry about it. But yeah, this happens in the real world. You know, the interviewer slips up on a name or something like that. But in today's day and age, it would have been a reason to lay Bob Cottle out or something like that. But thankfully, the Devil's Duo did not live down to their name and had a little bit of mercy on poor Bob, who was just there to help. And, you know, hey, they mess up the names, he can't get too mad at Uncle Bob.
I was going to say, it's Bob Cottle.
Yeah.
It's like, Cottle can do anything. And we're like, it's okay, it's Bob Cottle. Somebody else does it, you might get mad. But Bob's such a likable figure. It's like anything he does wrong, you can pretty much sweep it under the rug.
Twitter, one of the reasons I always push the Twitter and Facebook, because we do the hashtag Everyday Arn over there. We get to celebrate the greatness of Arn Anderson. But one of the other things is on this day in JCP TV history, or adjacent in JCP TV history, we put up shows that had taken place on that day or were running into town that day, and the promos that go along with that stuff. And it's Bob Cottle can have Kevin Sullivan there with a snake around his neck, with Gary Hart, with somebody spitting mist, with this happening over here, with Big Mama's boobs in his face, no matter what it is. And it's just Bob's just like, hey, and here's the microphone. And there's a guy screaming at him, red-faced. And there's just Bob like, oh, all right, here we go. It's like Howard Baum does a great impression of him on the 605 shows during the top 10s, and he could do that all of the time because there's a level of truth to it. I mean, there's absolute truth to it. And that, like, Bob was completely unflappable. And as Jim Ross called him one time, as he stood there with Doom around him, Ron Simmons and Butch Reed and Woman standing there, and then you had Bob just as Uncle Bob standing there, that is a white man in brown shoes. And that's one of the more amusing ways I could think about, because it's just Bob was always Bob no matter what. But back to the show where Bob was doing the announcing, and we get Ivan Koloff and Roman's boy Austin Idol against Don Gilbert and Keith Larson. And you could tell it's a Sonny Fargo ref day, because there's immediately banter as we go from break into this match. The bell rings. He's got no time for your nonsense. Austin Idol is shimmying and shaking his robe off. And Ivan Koloff has got to keep breaking the count as if he is sliding in the ring to break the 10. Sonny Fargo is counting to 5. He doesn't have time for this BS. and Ivan's got to keep breaking them up until Idol gets his robe off and we get onto the match between the two teams. It only goes for about 5 minutes. No surprise there. Roddy Piper is on commentary again, and Koloff and Idol get the victory with the move that shall not be named that we have talked about, the knee to the back of the head, driven down into the mat and into the upper back by Ivan Koloff. I think probably the most interesting thing about this match to me was the banter that took place between Roddy Piper and, again, Bob Caudle and David Crockett. As you've mentioned, Bob could always figure out a way to get under Roddy's skin a little bit as Roddy is ranting away about everything. And still, he will not give up who his partner is going to be to Bob either. Earlier on, he mentioned he was 16 steps ahead of everyone. During this match, he does slip out a little bit and mention that his partner is 6'7", which maybe that's a clue. How many 6'7" guys are out there? So he does at least give up that, but he doesn't give up much more. But he does get tweaked a little bit by Ricky Steamboat and David Crockman's pronouncement that he is leading Roddy Piper with the vote totals of who contributed the most in 1981.
It stays right in there.
Mr. Piper.
Yes.
I just want to congratulate you.
Thank you very much.
You're actually getting some votes in the contest we're having. Did you know that?
No.
He is actually getting. And I'm not talking about just one or two votes.
Who contributed the most?
Right, the wrestler who contributed the most. You're getting a lot of votes.
You're surprised?
Now, you're not number one.
Who's number one?
Ricky Steamboat is the number one vote getter right now.
How do you figure that? How do you think
he's got
Steamboat's
the most votes? Evidently,
that's
has
right.
The
Ricky Steamboat right now has the most votes. Now you're up there, but you're not number one. Now you might want to tell the fans if they want to vote for you, they can write in. We have the address. It's going to be.
I can't believe
right there. It is
already.
Right there. 421 Briarbend.
Roddy Piper, 421 Briarbend, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28209, PIPER.BI. You see, they can't help but say that I'm number one because I won everything there was to
win.
Well,
right now, you're not number one. You're up there, but you're not number one yet.
Did you get the address? 421 PIPER.BI, Briarbend, right. Charlotte.
And fans, if you don't want to vote for Roddy Piper, vote anyway because we want everybody to vote in
that's
this contest.
Right.
No, don't vote if you don't want
to
vote.
The rest of us contributed most for 81.
Don't vote if you don't want to vote for me.
Blackjack Mulligan. Blackjack Mulligan Jr. is getting a lot of votes, even though he wasn't here in 81. Also, Terry Taylor is getting an awful lot of votes.
He wasn't here either, David.
That's right.
Steamboat. Yeah, so never mind. Just like this tag team here.
There you hear the banter between everybody. Once again, it is pointed out neither Terry Taylor nor Blackjack Mulligan Jr. were around in 1981. I had theorized. I honestly thought I had cracked the Da Vinci Code when it came to Bob Caudle writing Roddy Piper about that, about the fact that Terry Taylor keeps getting votes even though he was not there. I thought maybe it was kind of playing into the feud that they seem to be building or simmering in the background. Now they mentioned it about Barry Windham or Blackjack Mulligan Jr. Am I imagining things? Is this something that they keep doing to tweak Roddy Piper because he keeps talking and commentating on matches of those two gentlemen? Do they just keep bringing it up because they just keep bringing it up? Do you have any thoughts on that? Am I way too hung up on this? Does this bother anybody else like it bothers me?
No. I even wrote that in my notes, Mike, that Crockett claims that Mulligan Jr. is getting a lot of votes even though he wasn't there in 81. And then in capital letters, I put, huh? Like, did they forget the angle that they were doing with Slaughter? It just, this was still January of 82. So it was only just a few short weeks ago that Mulligan Jr. was there in 81. And for them to claim he wasn't there, that one was kind of mind-boggling to me.
And like, by wrestling terms, he had been there a long-ass time. Like, he had been there for the last quarter of the year because obviously we had the big buildup coming out of Thanksgiving and into Christmas with the whole deal with him and Sergeant Slaughter and the deal with the Cadillacs and the U.S. title and him winning a Cadillac and losing it to Slaughter and Slaughter and all that stuff that took place. Like, he had been around, plus the fact that, you know, if you include Knoxville, he had been around much longer than that, feuding with Kevin Sullivan and being the guy to basically the kind of, I guess, the heater there to get Blackjack Sr. into things as he was touring around and would come back into the area, they would do that. So it's just, yeah, I mean, if you were on the most western end of North Carolina or Virginia, this was not something that was going to be foreign to you anyway, so you might want to vote for Barry Windham or Blackjack Mulligan Jr. Now I keep doing what Roddy Piper's doing, calling him Barry Windham. But again, it was odd, and it just keeps driving me nuts, and I don't know why, it just does. So there. And it drives Roman nuts too, and they need to figure this out.
Hey, Mike.
Yes.
Mike, can I make a comment on the match for real quick?
Sure.
Something I thought showed the greatness of Ivan Koloff was that there was a botch spot in there where Gilbert picks him up for a body slam. And I don't know if Ivan was too heavy or what happened, but Gilbert dropped him real clumsily. And Ivan improvised, and he rolled him over and tried to pin him. And I just thought it was brilliant how Ivan improvised to make it look like he counteracted the hold. But in reality, it looks like he was too heavy for Gilbert when he tried to pick him up and slam him.
God, he is so great. He is just so, so great. He was such a professional and so experienced at that time. And it may be the other person's fault, but you got to try to make hay of it. You can't just throw a fit in the middle of the ring, unless you're Randy Orton. You can't do that. You got to try to make it work. And he was the ultimate professional at that. And he and Austin Idol get the victory over Don Gilbert and Keith Larson and Ivan Koloff, one of Ole Anderson's old partners. Looks like that's how they keep angling him, that it's going to be he and Austin Idol for this thing. We then go into an interview with the Blackjack Mulligan Sr. and Jr., where Blackjack Mulligan Sr., hey, do you know how many heads of cattle you could buy with all of the money that you could win from some of these tournaments? $25,000. A tournament, you know, millions of dollars going to be given away by the time this thing is done. They hammer it home. He talks about all of the prestige that you can have going to the Rock Inn at 2 a.m. Let me tell you something. I've thought at points in my life that you could have some prestige going into a place at 2 a.m. You find out as you get a little bit older, if you survive those places, probably wasn't the best idea in the world. But nevertheless, the Mulligans exit stage left. And out we get Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood. And we saw Blackjacks teaming together. We've seen a lot of different combinations of Jay Youngblood and Jake Roberts and Blackjack Mulligan Jr. and this, that, and the third. But the one thing that we haven't seen was a reunion of Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood that was hinted at by Ray Stevens. And it seems like they're back. He obviously has got his plans with Ric Flair and his situation with him. But it was nice to see Steamboat and Youngblood back together, and we'll play that promo for you now.
We have Blackjack Mulligan Sr., Blackjack Mulligan Jr. talking about tag teams and outstanding tag teams right here. Ric Steamboat, Jay Youngblood. Ric, everybody, of course, is talking about the tag team tournament.
Well, that's true, Bob. But Jason understands, and I'm sure the fans do, because of this contest that they're having with the votes and everything, and I seem to be having a slight edge over a couple of the other guys, which has given me the honor to wrestle the world's heavyweight champion in a title match, Nature Boy Ric Flair. He knows that this is something that I've been looking forward to for a long, long time. But I just want to say, don't count Youngblood and myself out as a tag team combination, because, as you know, this tournament is going to take a long time, and we're going to be in there somewhere. You watch.
That's right. Hey, you fellas have been champs, you know.
That's right. These belts are very, very familiar to Rick and us. But, you know, we can't be counted out of the competition because, like Rick said, Rick has been voted in to be the number one contender for the world. Rick, I can't say much more for that because you are, brother, the number one contender for that world belt. If it wasn't Flair, it'd be you. But I'll tell you what, we're looking forward to coming wherever there is a tournament to wrestle.
Fans, that's it at ringside. All right, fans, in the ring right now. We're ready for more action. Tag team action right here. And what a match it's going to be. One fall now. 10-minute time limit. Our opponents. First, the protege of Sergeant Slaughter at 235 pounds. Here is Jim Nelson. Jim Nelson. His partner from St. Joseph, Missouri, 245 pounds, Steve Seibert. Steve Seibert. Their opponents, first from Indianapolis at 230 pounds, Johnny Weaver. His partner from North Carolina, 230 pounds, Don Kernodle. Don Kernodle.
There you hear the introductions of our next match, which followed that interview with Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood. And it is during this match we actually hear the real reason that Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood are standing right there. It is to put the image back in your mind and to remind everyone that Steamboat and Youngblood are a tag team, and obviously it's under the guise of the NWA World Tag Team Championship Tournament, but it is mentioned on commentary that Nature Boy Ric Flair will be back in the studios next week, and you heard Ricky Steamboat refer to his match coming up for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship against Ric Flair. At the end of the show, we will reveal to you who Ric Flair takes on next week in that match on television, which will make everything a lot more clear if you haven't figured it out already. But Johnny Weaver and Don Kernula against Steve Seibert and Private Jim Nelson. At one point, Sergeant Slaughter comes to ringside. Ray Stevens has been out on commentary now, replacing Roddy Piper, standing alongside Bob Cottle and David Crockett. At one point in this match, Kernula holds Nelson. Weaver winds up. He misses and actually hits Kernula, sending him back into the corner, and it doesn't put him out or anything like that. He's able to recover and get the victory, but Johnny Weaver accidentally laid a shot in on Don Kernula. They didn't sell it on commentary, didn't make it a big deal. The story of the match to me was basically how Kernula was featured and how Jim Nelson was protected. Steve Seibert taking a lot of the big bumps ultimately was the one who took the loss as Jim Nelson was angry and walked away. There was a lot of talk about Nelson's ascension under Slaughter, and Kernula looked really good, showed a lot of fire, got in a lot of offense. And I thought looked quite good and ultimately seemed to serve a purpose to set some things up as we know later on, but as we see them begin in motion right here between Weaver and Kernula. Any thoughts on the match?
Well, you've painted a real good picture there, Mike, because on paper, when it came about, I was thinking like, okay, you got the tag team tournament coming up. Slaughter has already taken Nelson under his wing, but yet Nelson is teaming with Steve Seibert, which doesn't make sense, but when you paint the picture like that, you can kind of understand why things are happening. And then Slaughter came to ringside, but didn't interfere. And I don't know, it kind of made you wonder, like, okay, Nelson's his protege, why isn't he helping Nelson? And there's some things that are going to be unraveled, but you did a lot better job painting the picture on this match, because on paper, didn't really make sense, but now it makes a little more sense.
Bob Cottle then throws it to a clip of the AWA TV of Adrian Adonis and Jesse the Body Ventura. And it is not the full match. There were really, it's not all that notable. What ultimately is going to end up happening is they go ahead and they play the tape the next week on TV in its entirety. At least they say that they do. I think the only things really worth mentioning out of this was some of the lines from Roger Kent, one of which was, peroxide and purple. Now that's a combination. It's just you'd have to know how Roger Kent, if you know what he sounds like, how he was saying some of these lines, describing what Jesse the Body Ventura was wearing. And to take you back into time a little bit, if you are under a certain age, he does point out what the colors of one of their opponents, Shannon, his tights are, in case you happen to be watching in black and white. So, yeah, it was a different time in 1982. I remember when I was little, had a little, like one of those 3-inch black and white TVs, and we had a couple of TVs that were black and white that floated around the house. So it was not out of the realm of possibility this was the case here, although God knows when that tape was from too. But we only get a little bit of that, and then we move on to where, again, local spots probably played, or actually definitely played. We get the interview with Don Gilbert and Keith Larson. Larson started off okay, and then we got a lot of heavy heavy breathing, and he got that accent anyway because he's from back in the western part of the state there, and we got some uhs, and we got some more uhs, and Bob had to kind of throw it to Don Gilbert, and Don is, God bless Don. Don is every 70s enhancement guy you've probably seen before on your local program. A lot of hair, not exactly a defined body, and he just kind of needs a friend during the interview. Just things are going to be looking up for him, and if I can just find that partner, then everything is going to be okay. But yeah. It was not the shiniest example of interview skills there. Moves us on to our next match. Jay Youngblood and Ricky Steamboat against Doug Vines and Bill White. The match doesn't go on for too long. Only goes on for about 2 minutes. Ray Stevens is on the mic. And Bob Cottle notes that Youngblood and Stevens are former champions. Stevens hypes them up. In 1980, Ricky Steamboat and Jay Youngblood had a short but violent feud with Greg Valentine and Ray Stevens. This was coming off Baron Von Raschke and Paul Jones, the feud that they had with them. They basically, Stevens and Valentine, caught Youngblood and Steamboat slipping and took the belts off of them. They went to war that summer. Ultimately, what it ended up leading into was Valentine being stripped away kind of off of the group and Jimmy Snuka coming in. And we got Gene Anderson's army, which consisted of the Iron Sheik, Jimmy Snuka, and Ray Stevens, with Greg Valentine on the periphery going after Ric Flair. And that was, of course, a very famous time in Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling history. That is referenced here during this match. No surprise, Steamboat and Youngblood get the victory. Steamboat gets the wing on Vines. Not a long match or anything like that. Obviously, just a showcase for Steamboat and Youngblood. A little bit of them getting back on the horse and Ray Stevens on commentary. And an embarrassment of riches when it comes to talent and the fact that almost anybody can walk out, do some guesting on the microphone and have it be awesome.
Yeah, Stevens was always good to listen to. He had that rough voice, but there was just something about listening to him cut a promo or do commentary, and Stevens was always somebody I liked listening to on the mic.
Go with Bob Cottle and Ray Stevens announcing that Ric Flair is going to be coming back.
Ray, I don't want this hour to get away, fans. So much has been happening, and I want to remind all of you, and Ray, I'm excited about this. Next week, right here, live on Mid-Atlantic Wrestling, we're going to see the world's champion, the world's heavyweight champion, Ric Flair, who will be here live next week.
Well, I've said it many times. Ric Flair is exciting if you just see him walk down the street. To watch him wrestle is a treat for anybody.
And while we're at it, might as well go ahead and play the end of the match between Steamboat and Youngblood over Vines and Bill White, where Steamboat gets Youngblood coming off the ropes, lifts him up in the air, and drops him right on top of Vines for the win.
As Steamboat has Vines high into the air for the tag. Now here comes Youngblood.
Look at the tightness.
Ray, this could be it right here.
They've got it. That's what you call extra teamwork, tremendous timing.
Yes, sir. Rick Steamboat, Jay Youngblood, very, very impressive showing for them. And I think that shows to everyone and to all the teams that this young combination is really ready for this tournament or any other tournament.
So there's the end of that match. We then go into interviews to end the program. And talked about a superfecta of promos last week. We get another superfecta this week. Just an embarrassment of riches in the Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling territory. Sergeant Slaughter, Jim Nelson come out first, followed by Roddy Piper, Ivan Koloff, Austin Idol. It's just absolutely outstanding. And here these guys go. Just might as well just stand back and let them rip.
You know, it seems to cease to amaze me just what a guy like Cronoma will take. A man like Weaver punches him right in the face, and they get up and shake hands, and he pats him on the back. That's okay, Cronoma. Well, you had your chance to join me, and you haven't. But the offer still stands, Cronoma. If you want to be one of the privates of Slaughter's brigade, the offer still stands, and I'm going to be in that tag team tournament also.
You know what? I'm just going to pause that right there for a minute. Brian Last style. And Roman, I'm going to throw it to you because this is the first time that I recall hearing on Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling Television that Sergeant Slaughter has been actively recruiting Don Carnoodle. It may have been something that they were mentioning on Worldwide Wrestling more. Maybe it was, you know, it certainly was not exclusive to Maple Leaf or Knoxville or Chattanooga or something like that. So here we go. We get the beginnings now of Don Carnoodle looking like he's going to come into the fold. Have I been missing something during these broadcasts, or is this the first time that it's pointed out to you as well?
Yes, it was my first time. I swear, Mike, you must be looking at my notes because I was thinking that. I was like, where was I when he mentioned about Carnoodle possibly joining his brigade, and he mentions it once again, I'm going to make the offer. And so, yeah, there's a gap. There's something missing there.
Going to bring it back to the promos now. Roddy Piper then steps in to take his shot.
All right. Of course, Sergeant Slaughter and his protege, Jim. How am I going to be in that tag team tournament? Roddy Piper, right here, Roddy. Hey, wait a minute. Come back. Hey, here. Come over here and talk in the microphone.
I'll do what I want to do, mister.
I do what I want to do, you see. I don't tell nobody what I don't want to tell them. I tell them who my tag team partner is going to be when I want them to know, you see. I'm not stupid enough to put it all together in front of you, because what are you going to do for me? I got me a man, makes Abdullah the Butcher look like Shirley Temple Jack. 6'7", 400 pounds of gorilla. You want to know who he is? I'm not going to tell you who he is. I'm not stupid like some of these other wrestlers. Ooh. I'm not stupid at all. So you go ahead and bring it on, mister, but you're going to find out one thing. When RP talks, people listen.
What are you talking? Yeah. Who are you calling stupid?
I'm not calling you stupid. I didn't say you were stupid. I'm just saying that you may have to watch out just a tiny bit, Mr. Koloff.
Get out of here right now. I've got something to say. First of all, I'm going to set my TV title aside. And it's very obvious to the people that I'm going to get myself a partner. Right now I'm looking over, see what partners I could possibly get. And you see, Austin Idol as my partner just a few minutes ago. What a team we could make. Maybe the Andersons, the Briscoes, and the Funks, and they have something to worry about then. Or this Steven, and this Patterson. I'm after these World Tag Team belts. $25,000 each time I enter. I put in a $1,000 entry fee I've already sent to Russia for $20,000. If necessary, I will enter.
Tournament?
This is right. I'm going to get those tag team belts.
All right, Austin Idol right
all
here.
All the big guns are here, darling. They're all talking world's titles. They're coming in from all over the world. They're coming in from Europe. They're coming in from Hawaii. They're coming in from Canada. They're coming in from Mexico. And they can come from anywhere they want to, darling, because when it all boils down and when the dust settles, Jackson, you're going to be looking at one half of the world's heavyweight title holders right here. And that's right, Piper.
Yes, well, we'll see if we just can't make your heart throb a bit, Mr. Heartthrob.
And we definitely will. Remember one thing. You're not saying who your partner is.
No.
I'm not saying who my partner is.
Yeah, so there. Even though it seems like, you know, his partner was Ivan Koloff, who had already scared Roddy Piper right there. So Austin, you know, see, that's where your ego and your mouth get in the way, buddy. You could have just pointed at Ivan, and Piper would have backed off. But no, you had to go ahead and match him and not reveal who your partner was either. Well, I don't know if your partner was 6'7", 400 pounds, and makes Abdullah the Butcher look like Shirley Temple, but we'll have to find out how all of that goes. Again, a hell of a way to end the program there with that set of promos by that group of gentlemen right there. Just unbelievable.
Just one legend after another. You know, it's amazing how much talent Mid-Atlantic had. Just one legend after another in those interviews. And I would have loved to seen a series of promos with Idol and Piper together, like we just listened to on that clip. That would have been so much fun to have those two go at it on a regular basis.
And that pretty much had wrapped up the show there. From this point and what was going on that week with these results coming from the Clawmaster, Jim Zordani's webpage and posted up by David Baker. All of this information you could see, by the way, too, in the reviews that David Taub has done for these programs over at the Mid-Atlantic Gateway, our friends over there. We are very, very, very grateful for the support of Dick Bourne and Dave Chappell and that whole crew, amongst other people. And I am always very grateful to people like David Baker and Carol Hall and so many of the people out there that have gone and done the microfiche research and kept the newspaper clippings and all that sort of good stuff. Mark Eastridge, well, from over the years, just thank you so much for that. And during this week in Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, Thursday the 28th in Sumter, South Carolina, Ivan Koloff faced Jimmy Valiant for the TV title, while Jake Roberts faced Austin Idol. Also on that show, an interesting match in hindsight, Jay Youngblood and Don Kernoodle faced Carl Fergie and Eddie Mansfield. A unique group right there. Thursday in Norfolk on January 28th, Blackjack Mulligan Sr. and Jr. defeated Sergeant Slaughter and Private Nelson, while Ray Stevens defeated the Ninja by DQ in what was billed as a bounty match. Roddy Piper also went to a double disqualification against Bob Armstrong. On Friday the 29th in Charleston, South Carolina, Blackjack Mulligan Jr. defeated John Studd in a match with two referees, and Porkchop Cash and Jay Youngblood defeated Ox Baker and the King Carl Fergie to win the NWA Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Championship. No word on whether or not Porkchop Cash, or Jay Youngblood bothered with any of Carl Fergie's combs in the locker room before the match took place. Maybe that's what it was. They were messing with his combs. His head wasn't really into the match, and unfortunately, they lost the NWA Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Championship to the Porkchop and Jay Youngblood. On Friday the 29th in Richmond, Ricky Steamboat faced Roddy Piper. Black Jim Mulligan faced Sergeant Slaughter, while the Masked Superstar faced off against Ole Anderson. Another match on that show, too, Austin Idol and Ivan Koloff against Ray Stevens and Jimmy Valiant. So that just was an awesome night in Richmond. On Sunday, January 31st in Toronto, this card ended up getting canceled due to snow, but it was going to be one of the final Cadillac tournaments that was going to be taking place. And here's actually some promos from that show, or the lead into that show, up from Maple Leaf TV, hosted by Rich Landrum. Here's Roddy Piper and Sergeant Slaughter talking about appearing in Toronto for the Cadillac tournament.
Let's take time for this commercial message about the Mid-Atlantic wrestling events coming up in your area.
Wrestling fans, the Guelph Memorial Gardens is a site for a great card of live action on Monday, February the 1st at 8 p.m. with stars like Jay Youngblood, Johnny Weaver, Roddy Piper, and many more. And you don't want to miss the super spectacular card of live action in Toronto's Maple Leaf Gardens, Sunday, January the 31st at 7:30 p.m. because you'll see a gigantic tournament for a 1982 Cadillac. The pairings, well, that'll be determined by the luck of the draw. Such stars entered as Angelo Mosca, Rick Steamboat, Dino Bravo, the Boogie Woogie Man Jimmy Valiant, the team of Johnny Weaver and Jay Youngblood, along with Adrian Adonis, Jesse Ventura, Mr. Fuji, also Rowdy Roddy Piper, and Sergeant Slaughter. Roddy?
Cadillacs in Canada. It'll be really a novelty, as there is no Cadillacs in Canada. They're going to ship one in from the United States, $17,000 a car. And who would look better in a Cadillac than me? What it means, though, is you got the first guy, got to wrestle the second guy, got to wrestle the third guy, got to wrestle the fourth, got to wrestle the fifth, until they all got to wrestle me. Don't you dread that day, huh?
Also entered in the big tournament, the U.S. Heavyweight Champion, Sergeant Slaughter.
You know, sometimes I have to wonder how smart that Roddy Piper is. In Canada, they cost $25,000. They're not $17,000. But I don't really care about the price. You and I, Piper, might end up in that ring. You and I, Dino Bravo. You and I, Jesse Ventura. You and I, Ricky Steamboat. You and I, Angelo Mosca. But I'm gonna... Hey, buddy, move out of the way, maggots. This is my interview time here. Now, like I was saying, these maggots out here in Canada, they don't know what's gonna happen. They're taking a draw out of the hat. Might be my hat, my DI cover.
And you were saying I wasn't too smart.
Hey, listen,
and you stand
nobody
here.
Nobody interrupts me. I'm the sergeant. Nobody interrupts me without permission.
Absolutely. I'm not going to interrupt you, Sarge. I think you're fantastic. The only problem is you're like a pelican. Your mouth holds more than your belly can.
Yeah, we'll see in that match who's got the biggest mouth.
So there you hear the setup for what was supposed to take place in Toronto on January 31st. Unfortunately, that show ended up being snowed out, and we would not get another show in Toronto until I believe it was the end of February. We will have that coming up. It also may have paid a little bit of havoc on what were the Guelph TV tapings that took place for Maple Leaf TV. It ended up being a 10-match show, which featured Johnny Weaver and Jay Youngblood wrestling as a team twice. Now, those Maple Leaf shows tended to feature a lot of the same guys, as they would tape 3 and 4 weeks of TV with basically a smaller crew. But this even seemed to be pushing it by their standards. Johnny Weaver wrestled four times. Roddy Piper wrestled 4 times. Jay Youngblood wrestled 3 times. Chris Markoff wrestled 5 times on those tapings, which took place on Monday, February 1st in Guelph. A lot of people skipped after what was supposed to be going up to Toronto. They just stayed home. January 31st in Asheville, Ivan Koloff defeated Jake Roberts in a TV title versus a Cadillac title match. Mulligan Sr. and Ray Stevens defeated Ole and Terry Gordy. Blackjack Mulligan Jr. defeated Ox Baker as well. On Monday, February 1st, in Greenville, South Carolina, Ricky Steamboat defeated Sergeant Slaughter by DQ, while Jimmy Valiant defeated Ivan Koloff, and Austin Idol defeated Don Kernoodle, who was subbing for Michael Hayes. On the 2nd in Raleigh, Blackjack Mulligan Sr. defeated Sergeant Slaughter by DQ, Mulligan Jr. defeated John Studd, while in Columbia, South Carolina, Ric Flair defeated Ole Anderson in an NWA world title match. And I have, if I can dig this up here and find it in a timely fashion, I will actually attach it right here. And if you don't hear it, then I was not able to find it, but I have promos for that show hiding somewhere. And if I get a chance, I will insert them. If not, I will try to find them by the time we do next week's show. But then we moved on to Wednesday, February 3rd, back to the WPCQ studios. And we heard Ric Flair was coming back. He will be facing off next week against Jay Youngblood. And we will be reviewing that show as it airs on the WWE Network, the one that was taped on February 3rd, 1982, and was broadcast on February 6th, 1982, locally. Ivan Koloff and Austin Idol are also on the show, as well as Jake Roberts. We get Private Nelson against Blackjack Mulligan Jr. So another loaded up show with surely much conversation about the NWA World Tag Team Championship Tournament, as well as who contributed the most to Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling in 1981. Roman, and then we wrap up another episode of the show here. Any closing thoughts or want to put a bow on this thing for us?
One thing that stood out about this episode of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling were the interviews. More so the interviews than the matches. And one was the Keith Larson interview. And not to pick on him, but boy, was it painful to sit through. He's talking about the NWA Tag Team Tournament, and he sounds like he just came out of a coma. No life, no enthusiasm, and at one point he even forgot what he was going to say. And I felt really bad for him. I wanted to throw him a life raft or something and help rescue him, but boy, was that painful to sit through. And the Steamboat interview. He's talking about how he wants to get a shot at Flair because he was the leading vote getter for the Who Contributed the Most contest. And he's talking about entering the tag tournament. And it's ironic that this episode was from 1982, and here we are in 2019. And when I hear the name Steamboat, I automatically think of Flair, and I automatically think of Youngblood. And in that interview, they were both prevalent focal points of the interview. I just thought that was kind of interesting. But it was a good, fun show. Lots of talk about how important this tag tournament is and how far spread it can go. I mean, you have the Florida connection with Eddie Graham. They're showing matches from AWA TV. At one point, Gordon Solie even mentioned that the Briscoes might have to wrestle in India. So they're really showing the global importance of this tag team tournament. And I thought they did a good job of getting that point across.
Yeah, one of the things we're going to be doing along with the show next week is actually previewing the very first of the NWA World Tag Team Championship tournaments. And we had the East-West combination. We're supposed to be seeing the rest of their match on TV next week. We get Mr. Fuji and Mr. Saito as well. And one of the reasons that we are going to be getting some footage on them is because they're in that tournament in Greensboro, which happened on February 7th. Which also featured Ole Anderson and Stan Hansen. We got Adrian Adonis and Jesse Ventura, Jake Roberts and Jake Youngblood and Jay Youngblood, Ray Stevens and Pat Patterson, Johnny Weaver and Jimmy Valiant, Terry Taylor and Tim Horner, Fuji and Saito, and Idol and Koloff. So just a very impressive group of talent that's going to be in Greensboro on February 7th. But we will talk about that next week when we talk about the TV, which took place on February 6th, 1982. Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, as it appears on the WWE Network. Just go to WWE Network, WWE.com/watch to find out how you can subscribe to that and follow along with us. Once again, we want to thank you very, very much for your patronage of this program. If you like the program, go and you're listening through iTunes or anywhere that offers a rating system. Please rate us 5 stars or higher. If it's the Dave Meltzer rating system, vote us at least 7.25. The Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling Podcast is a production of the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network. And guess what? We can't get out of here any better than Bob Cottle can get us out of here.
And that'll do it for this week. See you next week. And until then, so long for now.